ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय कर्माणि अनिहस्य भवो भवस्य ते दुर्गाश्रयो धरि भयात् पलायनम् कलात्मनो यत् प्रमदा यथाश्रमा स्वात्मन् रथे खिद्यति धीर्विदम् इह कर्माद्यनिहस्य भवो भवस्य ते दुर्गाश्रयो धारि भयात् पलायनम् कालात्मनो यत् प्रमदा यथाश्रमा स्वात्मन् रथे खिद्यति धीर्विदम् इह कर्माण्यनिहस्य भवो भवस्य ते दुर्गाश्रयो धारि भयात् पलायनम् कालात्मनो यत् प्रमदा यथाश्रमा स्वात्मन् रथे खिद्यरिधिर्विधम् इह कर्मण्यनिहस्य भवो भवस्य ते दुर्गाश्रयो धारि भयात् पलायनम् कालात्मनो यत् प्रमदा यथाश्रमा स्वात्मन् रथे खिद्यरिधिर्विधम् इह कर्माणि एक्टिविटीज अनिहस्य of one who has no desire bhava birth abhavasya of one who is never born te your durga ashraya taking shelter of the fort atha thereafter aribhayat out of fear of the enemies palayanam flee kala atmana of he who is the controller of eternal time yat that pramada ayuta in the association of women ashrama household life svaatman in your own self rate one who enjoys kidyati is disturbed dhi intelligence vidam of the learned iha in this world. Translation. My Lord, even the learned sages become disturbed in their intelligence when they see that your greatness engages in fruitive work, although you are free from all desires, that you take birth, although you are unborn, that you flee out of fear of the enemy and take shelter in a fort, although you are the controller of invincible time, and that you enjoy householder life surrounded by many women, although you enjoy in yourself. Purport. Pure devotees of the Lord are not very much concerned with philosophical speculation in regard to transcendental knowledge of the Lord, nor is it possible to acquire complete knowledge of the Lord. Whatever little knowledge they have about the Lord is sufficient for them, because devotees are simply satisfied in hearing and chanting about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This gives them all transcendental bliss. But some of the pastimes of the Lord appear contradictory, even to such pure devotees. And thus Uddhava asked the Lord about some of the contradictory incidents in his pastimes. The Lord is described as having nothing to do personally, and it is actually so, because even in the creation and sustenance of the world, the Lord has nothing to do. It seems contradictory then to hear that the Lord personally lifts the Govardhan Hill for the protection of his unalloyed devotees. The Lord is the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead appearing like a man. But Uddhava had doubts whether he could have so many transcendental activities. There is no difference between the personality of Godhead and the impersonal Brahman. How then can the Lord have so many things to do, whereas the impersonal Brahman is stated to have nothing to do, either materially or spiritually? If the Lord is ever unborn, how then is he born as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki? He is fearful even to Kala, the supreme fear, and yet the Lord is afraid of fighting Jarasandha and takes shelter in a fort. How can one who is full in himself take pleasure in the association of many women? How can he take wives and, just like a householder, take pleasure in the association of family members, children, relatives, and parents? All these apparently contradictory happenings bewilder even the greatest learned scholars, who, thus bewildered, cannot understand whether inactivity is a fact or whether his activities are only imitations. The solution is that the Lord has nothing to do with anything mundane. All his activities are transcendental. This cannot be understood by the mundane speculators. For the mundane speculators, there is certainly a kind of bewilderment. But for the transcendental devotees, there is nothing astonishing in this. The Brahman conception of the Absolute Truth is certainly the negation of all mundane activities. But the Parabrahman conception is full with transcendental activities. One who knows the distinctions between the conception of Brahman and the conception of Supreme Brahman is certainly the real transcendentalist. There is no bewilderment for such transcendentalists. The Lord himself also declares in Bhagavad Gita 10.2, "Even the great sages and demigods can know hardly anything about my activities and transcendental past potencies." The right explanation of the Lord's activities is given by Grandfather Bhishma, Bhagavatam 1.19, as follows: "Na hyasya karhishchit rajan puman veda vititsitam viditsitam yad vijnanasya nad vijnanasya yukta muhyanti kavayo pihi." This point here brought up by Uddhava then is very, very essential point. Because in here we're dealing with Krishna and we're dealing with transcendence, which is actually something that we're not accustomed to, at least not for some time. It's been some time since we've dealt with it. So the tendency is that we will think in a very standard way. That you have this, then you do this, you get that. But actually it's because you have this and you want that, therefore you do something. Right? That's actually what's going on. In theory, they will look at it, sambandha abhideya prayojana, but in actuality, it will go sambandha prayojana abhideya. Right? So, this creates a difference. we're thinking we are God, and we want to control and enjoy. And the main principle that's important is that feeling of control, that feeling that everything's working how we want it to go, that it functions and responds the way we want, we get the results we want. So we look upon that element. But for Krishna, he is God, so he doesn't have to do this. So he sees himself, then he sees the devotee. Then depending upon what it is he wants to gain in that interaction, then he acts. Does that make sense, the difference between these two? Yes? No? All right? It's a subtle point, but it's these subtle points that make it here, because he's saying that this is hard even to understand for the great personalities, because we're so used to action-result. Right? Because you're performing an action to get a result, and that result is observable. Right? So we have a very interesting combination here of that we, in our trying to be God but being feminine, reverse actually the process that God uses, who is masculine but interacts with feminine. So we'll be looking at the result as it's something tangible, observable phenomena. That is masculine. But we're not masculine, we're feminine. Right? So therefore, then we'll look at it through this, seeing the sambandha, then there'll be the abhideya. It becomes reversed. But in here, let me say, because we take material to be as it, what we think it is, we don't understand its position as Krishna's energy, and the Lord is the controller of it. We think we're the controller of it. So I'm controlling it, I'm getting the results, I'm doing it because of mundane need. I wouldn't do it if I don't have mundane need. Therefore, then God is performing something. He's getting a mundane result, seemingly. Therefore, that means there must be a mundane need. Does that make sense? Right? So we're making this mistake that we're taking it that Krishna, he has the same motives as us. That's why in all these, then, the rule is there, which is just a rule. But why is the rule there? Right? Or an action is there that gets a result. But what's the real reason that you're acting to get the result? You know what I'm saying? We're acting to get the result. But why is he acting and this result is coming, though he is transcendental, appearing to be not interested in the result? Because Krishna's result, Krishna's idea is very different from ours. His result is measured in terms of rasa. That's not in results, things. Right? Otherwise, if it's things, it's very important. But it's not. Krishna's not at all in any way attached. Given the example before, you have Govindaji Temple. I think it took 20 years to build. If you've ever gone around and looked at anything in India, if you don't want to bring in, you know, academic concepts or other kind of concepts, then you'll see the Govindaji Temple is probably one of the most elaborate and most exquisite architectural achievements in India, and therefore the world. It took 20 years to build. It was built for Govindaji to please Rupa Goswami by Man Singh. Rupa Goswami never saw it finished. And I think about 60 years after it was finished, it was dismantled. And Govindaji walked off and he's sitting in a small little haveli in Jaipur. Right? Haveli means house. Right? It's not actually a temple.
It's a house.
So that means for Krishna, these things don't really matter. Right? That's not what's important for him. So what's important is the interaction with the devotees, because he is Atmarama. But that Atmarama expands to enjoy the interaction with the devotees. So then one might say, well, why expand if one is so happy? But it's not that happiness can't increase. If you're dealing with eternality, then you're dealing with always expanding, always increasing, always developing. If happiness is there, then it's developing. Relationships are there. So through relationship, then one is able to increase this taste. So here's where the contradiction comes in. You have someone who doesn't actually need any activity to get any result, but results, activities are performed, but the result gotten is not the external that we see. It's the rasa between him and the devotees. That's what is important to Krishna. That's what he sees. Right? But we're looking at the other thing. Right? Because if you look at it in an activity, as we discussed before, grammatically speaking, action means the subject performs an activity on the object, right? It means the subject and the object meet through the verb. That's where the relationship is. That's where the interaction is. But the result, the dative, is another case. Does that make sense? It's on the other side. So that's not actually what's important to Krishna. It's the experience of the activity that is important. Right? He's already Atmarama. He's already masculine. So he increases that by interacting with the feminine. Right? And so the feminine can experience what is generated in the way of moods and feelings and that from the activity. Right? So that's what is shared between God and his energy. Right? The masculine aspect of getting the result done isn't actually that important for him. That's where we make the mistake, because when we're trying to be God, it's the result that's important for us. Right? Because we're trying to prove our masculinity. Krishna doesn't. Therefore, it already exists. Does this make some sense? Or? Yeah? So, in here then, we see when we cook this down, then the real thing of transcendence then isn't the forms that we're used to. Though those forms are the traditional forms and very important and will be used by Krishna and by the devotees. Right? Because they give a result. Right? But actually for Krishna, it's the connection with himself that's important. In other words, God's transcendental, whatever he does is transcendental. Therefore, anything connected to God is transcendental. So real transcendental is what's connected to him, not what's the form. Right? But the process of connecting has a form. Does that make sense? Just like we have a meal. We're going to set up seats, we're going to set up plates and cups and other, you know, whatever it is, containers and if needed, various other implements of eating, right? And there's going to be, we'll try to create the atmosphere, we'll, you know, create the food, we'll create all these different things. So, and then someone will sit down and eat, someone will serve, and there's an interaction there. So now, if you think about it, it's not, the form of it is, okay, eating means I have this situation. Right? And I have these items, but that's not actually the eating. right? The eating is ingesting the food in an environment that's conducive for ingestion. Right? Therefore, you can see people sitting on a train and they can create the same environment. Right? And they're enjoying their food and interacting with their family members, even though they don't have their normal, you know, plates and cups and everything like that. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So, in other words, what we're saying is the forms that are given in the Vedic literatures for expressing your love to Krishna is secondary for the love that is expressed through it. Does that make sense? Right? We get up in the morning, we take our bath, we come to the temple, we offer our obeisances. These are forms that are important because they're able to remind us and carry the affection we have for the Lord. I'm taking a bath because I'm going to see the Lord. He's clean, so I should be clean, right? You can't associate with somebody unless there's some common point, right? So therefore, I'm taking bath, I'm going to the temple, I'm ringing the bell, I'm offering my obeisances, even though these are the rules how I should do it, because this is a way through which I can express that affection. Right? I don't have that affection of Mother Yashoda, where I just walk in and then wake up Krishna with some sweet words and then get worried about why he's wearing Balaram's chudder, this blue chudder, when his is golden, and why he has so many scratches and bruises on his body because the boys are so rough with him, like that. That's not what we're doing. Right? We know, okay, we go and exactly at this time, then we knock on the door, we open the door, we go in, we light some suitable lights and we, make the environment nice according to rules like incense or this or that, because we know these to be done. Then we wake the deities, we say our prayers, and through those things we can express what devotion we have. Right? But if it's not if not being in the spontaneous position, then we have something to express it through. Right? Spontaneous means it will use those natural things that are nice in a way that want to please the Lord, rather than, okay, I have to please the Lord, these are the rules. Well, I want to please the Lord, these are what I have available. Right? Or this is what I'd like to do. The difference is very subtle, but it's important. So that is why sometimes we are doing our service so perfectly and we wonder why things are not going perfectly. Right? That's because the external may be going nice, but then whether the devotion that we're expressing through that perfectly performed service is of a quality that we're happy with. Right? That becomes the point. Right. So then from this position, then we can go to the position of that therefore it's actually what's connected to the Lord that is important, not something else. Right? These other things aren't what's important. Right? But because we connect them to the Lord, that's what makes them important. Right? We go to Mangalartik to see the Lord. Right? We go to Mangalartik to, to catch up on gossip or something, then that's not very important. Though the form is there, we're standing there in Mangalartik, but it's not actually, the devotional aspect is not manifest. Does this make any sense? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so the Brahman, basically we're looking at it, has no qualities and has no needs. Only something that has qualities you can get attracted to. And only if you're attracted, then there's needs. And if there's needs, there's activity. So if there's no qualities, there's no activity. Right? So how is that personality then engaged in all these things? So why is it contradictory? This is then Uddhava's question, and saying even those very intelligent become bewildered. Because in that bewilderment, then they're trying to take the logic of dealing with external forms and the interaction of those forms for result, as a excuse me, as opposed to what is actually the experience of devotion that is gained from the activity by the activities. Right? Does that make sense? So he's bringing this out because this bewilders a lot of people. I mean, this has very big implications, this point. It's a subtle philosophical point, but it means we'll do things like put the form of devotional service, religion, morality, economics, sense gratification, liberation, before devotional service, because those are direct things you can see. I perform the activity, I get a religious result, a pious result, I get money, I get sense gratification, I get freedom from material entanglement. Right? I get that. But devotion is something different. What is the tangible thing you can say you have? Right? That's the point. How can you say? Gopis can say, well, hey, we're right here in the middle of the Ras Mandala. Can't get better than that. And then what happened to Krishna? He left. Because the mood was wrong. Right? So the whole point is the mood. You have the subject, you have the object, they connect through the verb, but what does the verb represent? Right? So one of the main aspects is the mood. Right? Your time, the particular endeavor that gets you the particular result, those are there. Those are the forms that you can go subject, object, those are nouns. And you have this nounistic aspect of the verb through the time, you know, and the result, the accomplishment. But the mood is something different. So the mood is actually where the experience is. Does that make sense? So if that's wrong, even everything else is right, it won't make sense. I mean, it won't be interesting to Krishna. Right? It just won't be interesting. So even though everything is there, but that doesn't mean, you know, as a side point, that our endeavor where we don't have much devotion, we only have the form, that is not pleasing to Krishna. It's because we're using that form to try to express our love, which comes in the form of that I am a soul, I'm servant of God, I'm supposed to be serving God, so therefore I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So that beginning state of devotion, or that affection, or attraction, or attachment to Krishna, then is expressed through this, and Krishna appreciates that very much. But as we go, naturally then the form of it will be, by practice, become expert at it, right? You can't do something for 30 years and not become good at it, right? They say it takes you 10 years of doing something to become expert, right? That's the common thing. I think it's 10,000 hours of doing anything. They say you become expert at it, like that. So a lot's been going on. So then the tendency will go, now everything's fine because I'm so expert at it. But actually, that expertise is not the thing. It's the mood of it that's actually important to Krishna. Right? It's not the action of the verb, the result gotten from the verb, but it's the mood of the verb that means something to Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? Okay. This is also just side thing. Why the acharyas and the commentaries use a lot of grammatical explanation? Because grammar is fixed. You can give example from it. Same time as it is, can be quite boring. So that's why generally most of our translators drop all the grammatical explanation. Okay. So all these things don't make sense to to the logical element, because we take logic and connect it to philosophy. Philosophy, or the Vedanta, it's supported by logic, right? And grammar also is a kind of logic. So it doesn't make logical sense, these things. He doesn't need anything. He is the most detached. He has no connection with the material world, but he's living with 16,108 wives. And each one of those probably have hundreds of thousands, or, you know, more than that, of maidservants. So that means in any one palace, he's living with thousands. Multiply that times 16,108. You're talking about the Lord is sitting there with millions of women. So how is that? Right? So that's the question. So that's the whole point, is because it's connected to him, it becomes perfect. That's all. What's connected to Krishna is perfect. 11th canto makes this very clear, where Krishna makes a statement to Uddhava that whatever is in connection with me, that is the actual Bhagavat definition of piety. And what is not in connection with me, even though it is pious, according to the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, actually it's impious. So piety means what is in connection with me, and impiety means what doesn't have any connection with me. Right? So that's what's being brought out here. If that's understood, then this contradictions, all these then are very natural for the Lord. Also, just in opposites, the more, how you say, the distance between two compatible objects, the more taste is gained. Right? The more hungry you are, the better the food tastes. Right? So the more the distance. I buy it for 1 rupee, I sell it for 1,000. Right? There's more profit. Does that make sense? So the greater the distance, also the greater the taste. So therefore these contradictions also happen. That's why there's such a difference between, like, the male and female, or he's completely detached from everything but he's living with all these ladies, or he doesn't have to do anything in the material world. It's all carried out by his energies, but he does something. Does that make sense? Right? The prime minister of the country has to run the country. So that will give a certain flavor. But, you know, sitting there and playing, you know, how you say, house with the kids, or doctor, that he doesn't have to do. But that will probably give him more pleasure than running the whole country. Right? Because it's something he doesn't have to do. I've heard that historians mention, I think it was Louis XIV, you know, very opulent, extremely opulent, that for fun, him and his queens and, you know, the maid servants and that, would dress up as cowherds and go out into their fields and just, you know, frolic around and behave as if they were common people. You know, talk the common language and do common things and all that. You know, of course, on their grounds, but like that. But is that, you understand? So in other words, something you don't have to do gives you more pleasure. Once I asked, I was in Vrindavan and I was serving some senior devotees, and it was my job to serve them prasad. So I would serve. And then another senior devotee would come, but he was junior to them, but still senior to me. And he would have naturally been sitting with those senior devotees taking prasad, and I would have been serving. But the senior men would ask him to serve. And so one time on the side, I asked one of these senior men, why do you have him serve instead of me serving? Like that. And they said, because it's actually the reciprocation is greater. Because he doesn't have to serve, but he wants to serve. It's your job, you have to serve. You know, you may like your job, that's okay, but he doesn't have to. He could sit with us, but he volunteers, said, I'd like to serve. And so they're pleased with it. Does that make sense? So like that, Krishna doesn't have to do anything anywhere with anybody. It's also mentioned spiritual, right? Because it says the Brahman is beyond, it doesn't even interact with spiritual. But he interacts. So that's what gives the best, most pleasure. That's what gives the most happiness to Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why it's called pastime with him. It's always pastime. With us, it's hard work. But with him, it's pastime because he has nothing to do. He doesn't have to do it. Any questions or comments? Or yes, sir.
The question
is
about shortcuts.
Shortcuts. Means like on the desktop? Or? Yeah.
I understand you take the elevator and you advance quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into this get rich quick or let's do the quick fix kind of an attitude. And you see a lot of times that the mood, and thus also the rasa, is lost.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how do we maintain proper balance? We all know we are on the clock here. So time is a crucial element. So we want to take the fast.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if you fry everybody else out, by like that devotee wrote that article that he was going quickly to the immigration counter to be faster in the time to reach or whatever, but in the meantime everybody else got a bad impression because they saw the devotee.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how do we take the shortcut so we don't lose the mood and lose the rasa?
Okay.
It means we do things very efficiently and quickly, but there's not much substance in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. You could all hear? No? Question and point being made is that we're talking about the process, but then we have shortcuts in the process, things that speed it up, make it very quick. And so, naturally, because time is short, we want to do things as quickly as possible to get the best result in the shortest time for Krishna. But sometimes we see is that it has advantages on one side, but disadvantages come up in that we, by doing everything short and quickly, sometimes we don't actually go very deep into it. So the mood is actually lost, or the rasa between the devotees, or whoever we're dealing with is lost in our attempt to very efficiently and quickly get a good result for Krishna. Right? So in this, I would say it's already included in the statement itself. It's kind of like in one sense, a self-answered point, in that by focusing on the mood, that's actually what's essential. That's what we're bringing up here, is that naturally, of course, in the beginning, the mood is, I want to do this for Krishna, so we contemplate it, we practice it, we become expert at it. But once we become expert, then we have to then work on the mood. That's generally just my observation. I've noted that for 3 to 4 years, the devotees will come into the movement, take up the practices, and because it's new and different, then they'll focus very much on them. And they'll be finding any faults they may be having in them and trying to improve, you know, like that. Then after 3 to 4 years, they become quite good at, you know, the general, you know, they can know all the songs, they can sing, they can do kirtan, they give classes, they know philosophy, they're, you know, following the principles and chanting becomes, you know, basically a stable thing. But then that tendency to find the fault and other things in ourselves, or that we focused on the expertise of it, then we continue with that. Because now we don't really have fault in ourselves, we turn that to others, and then we have a tendency to then start to, the expertise, we start to narrow it to keep interest, or change it or something. And we keep it in the externals, rather than turning it to the point of introspection. Where, okay, now I've worked out the faults in my gross application of these activities. Now what's actually the subtle motives behind it? How can I increase the devotional aspect of it? How can I appreciate the devotees that we're working with so the relationships improve also there? And then along with it is the technique that I'm refining. how does it actually, what is its function in those relationships with Krishna and the devotees? So then the same intelligence, the same endeavor, the same drive can be there, but now you're refining something rather than just getting a seeming immediate result. Because immediate result will come with time anyway. Even if you get a quick fix thing, it actually will take you many years to perfect it. You know, of course, if you have a good nature at it, then you catch a few things, you'll get it. But that'll be one person. Everybody else will be struggling for years before they start to get the results from those, you know, 1 minute, you know, this and 10 minute that and, you know, something like that. Because the person that wrote the 1 minute probably spent 30 years becoming good at it. And then he gave the essence of it in a small, thin book. Like that. So someone else who has that same ability and capacity very quickly can do. So then it would bring it back to something we've discussed before, is that the externals are there because that's the form of it. Anything that happens, happens through a form, right? So like it's the world of nouns, right? Because that's what we see, what we deal with. So we need them. But the mood behind it, the principles on which they're functioning, that's more important. So if we can keep to the principle, in other words, why is it the quick fix works? Right? It's either the person's very intelligent and has given you a principle on which all quick fixes can function. And so sometimes you get something like that. Generally what they'll do is they will give you some quick fix solutions that are based on a principle that they don't know, but they're intelligent enough to observe it and see that they always work in these situations. So if you have a similar situation, it will work. But if the situation is different, it won't work. So just taking it that by statement you're making is that, you know, looking at it positively, that it's working. We found we've created the environments that's working, but then the shallowness is found there in that is because the principle on which it's there, and that principle will be the same as any relationship. Whether you're dealing with money, whether you're dealing with people, you're dealing with the senses, you know, you're dealing with mechanics, it doesn't matter. It's the same principles that function that make relationship work. Relationship's always the same. Right? You're always going to have a subject, object, and a verb, and a result. You're always going to have those things. You're always going to have the sambandha abhideya prayojan. It's always going to remain. So as the more we contemplate that, then the more we see, we connect that my devotional activities and my expertise and my occupational activities and my management and my economics and my personal relationships, they actually are working on the same principles. Then that contemplativeness, that manisha, like that, Prabhupada used that word manisha, to be contemplative, be thoughtful. So doing things quick is not the problem, as we said before. It's not what you use, it's if it's connected to Krishna. And because we connected it today, doesn't mean the same quality of connecting tomorrow is enough. Right? It's just like, okay, let us say we just started music today. So just so we can figure out generally which keys we're supposed to be putting which fingers on and kind of getting that kind of note today, the teacher's going, very nice, very good. But tomorrow if you do exactly the same thing, he's not going to say very good. He's saying you haven't been practicing. Right? And after 5 years, then that's not going to be good enough at all. You're going to have to be quite good at singing many, many songs in various ways. So in the same way as with the quick fix, we also have to not become lazy, because that, okay, we've worked out the quick solution, now we're on top of it, now we can sit back. No, rasa means that it's constantly being endeavored for. There's never a time when it's perfect. It's perfect, but its perfection, it only remains perfect if you're constantly trying to improve it. That's the thing. So if one's constantly trying to make it better for Krishna, improve it for Krishna, like Mother just showed us, always trying to find new ornaments and new clothes and new persons and make new things for Krishna, even though he has everything in perfection.
like that. Radharani's always changing what she cooks. Right? She doesn't cook the same thing twice. So that means she's always improving. That means subtle. It doesn't mean gross. You know, today's, you know, one cuisine, tomorrow's another completely different cuisine. Like that. But does that make sense? It's improving. Does that make sense? So that endeavor, that's what makes it go. So by contemplation, by thoughtfulness, then we get realization. So then what would happen would be, what would be coming up is that we've heard things, we're practicing things, and we're getting a result. So we're understanding it, but we're not getting the satisfaction because it's not actually realization. So what we're leaving out of the equation is contemplation. Because you hear something, and if you contemplate it and apply it, right, then you'll get realization. Right? Well, if you study it, practice it, and don't contemplate it, you'll get knowledge but not vigyan. Yeah? You'll get vigyan. You won't get vigyan. So what's lacking is the vigyan. Because in there, that's actually lifestyle, that's actually substance. You know, that somebody lives in a way they live because of determination, that this is what they're going to do if anybody's there or not in any situation. Right? So like that, that's going to, like that. Or you try turning her around, sit her down, then maybe, you know, yeah. Does that make some sense? Yeah, okay. I think we should... It's time is there. So we'll end here, and then we'll continue with questions after 2-3 minutes for anybody who wants to stay. Jai Ho. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, this must be the Sanskrit. Thank you very much. Thank you. Very kind. Thank you. Arigato. Oh, you seem to have lost the man that had the question. Oh, here you are. I thought you... Yes. Ah, interesting question. No, I'll save the question. Sorry. That what was gleaned from the discussion was that material relations and that are illusory. So therefore, if you made a practical application of this, so therefore, if you had a marriage and it failed, would that be therefore considered successful because the material didn't work? And if it was successful, you failed. Like that. As we discussed in this, at least in relation to this particular presentation, is that if the marriage was conducted according to Krishna consciousness, whether it failed or was successful by mundane standards, it's successful. And if it wasn't Krishna conscious, even by mundane standards or not, it was not successful, it would be a failure. See, this is what's bewildering. This is the actual point. How is it that in the material world we're absorbed in sense gratification. So to take up spiritual life, we have to remove ourselves from sense gratification. Therefore, one, in this question, how could it be transcendental that God is hanging out with so many women? And two, is an application to our life, how could it be spiritual that a man is living successfully and happily with a woman and family in seemingly a very attached, economically viable, prosperous, and emotionally enlivening situation? Right? Does that make sense? That's the question that comes up. But that's why the answer is there, is if it's connected to Krishna, that's what makes it spiritual, not. You understand? See, karmakanda doesn't mean it's bad. Karmakanda means it's pious. But pious is not good enough. It's not devotion. Right? So the karmakanda is technically speaking, because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, right? So that means everything in the material world is reflected from the spiritual. So that means karmakanda is technically the reflection of the activities of the spiritual world. But the mood is wrong, and the desire is, the purpose is wrong. That's what makes it karmakanda, right? That's why in Gita, Arjuna was having trouble with this. It's the same point as Uddhava is making here. It's contradictoriness in the spiritual. So therefore then, he is seeing that, Krishna is pointing out, is that it's how it's done. Right? So if in knowledge you perform the activity for Krishna, means the results for Krishna, to please Krishna, right? That's called buddhi yoga. So karma is being used just as much as the karmis, right? But it's connected to Krishna, right? But in this, it only happens when there is detachment. That's what makes the difficulty to understand. If someone's detached, why would they be living with a wife and family and making money and, you know, banging their head against the wall, right? That would be the point. So that's why it's not technically understood how to operate the Vedic culture. Right? But it based on these same contradictions. He's so renounced, he's so detached, but he's so kind to everybody. Right? He's so detached, he's so renounced, but he's an expert grihastha. Right? What we look at is detached, renounced, nasty. Right? Ah, that's grihastas. Ah, women, this, that. Ah, I mean, like that, right? Then it's like, oh, so renounced. Yeah, come on, yeah. You know, like that. And grihastha has to be just grossly, sinfully, you know, just annoyingly, just, you know, just oozingly attached to, you know, just the disgusting, mundane, you know, interactions between family life. Right? Then it becomes very easy for us, you know, like that's why soap operas are very popular, because it's so obvious who's good and who's bad, right? Like that. At least the old ones were, and the new ones it's sometimes hard to tell. But, you know what I'm saying? So therefore we can say, this is good, detachment's good, attachment's bad. Therefore, anything to do with not dealing with the material world is good, and anything dealing with the material world is bad. It makes it very easy for us, very clear, fits into our boxes very nicely, and all that. But that's not how we function. Right? As a living being, we don't function according to logic. We create our environment, we do so many things like that, but actually our motives behind it are not necessarily, right? I want to be the temple president. Why? Because I've been here the longest, or I'm the biggest and fattest, I can sit on anybody here, or, I read all this quick fix books, or I'm the senior devotee, or what's actually behind it? Is it just, I have an administrative, managerial ability and nature. It comes naturally for me. So if I'm going to engage body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, then I can do, this is the kind of service that will engage me. At this point, if I go above temple president, it's too much for me. But being the temple commander, sometimes is not enough. So I will be fully absorbed in the Lord's service this way. And if Krishna gives the opportunity, the devotees are comfortable with it, then this way we'll be engaged. Rather than, why should he be? I've been here longer than him, or I'm the senior devotee, or, you know, whatever is the reason. You know, those are not... Does that make sense? So it's actually, it's the mood behind it that's important, not the logic of it. So the tendency is we apply the mood to ourselves, the logic to everybody else, right? Everybody is very liberal and broad-minded and accommodating, you know, and generous to themselves. And to others, then, you know, we're very strict and, you know, standards and don't put up with, you know... Does that make sense? So here is that the Bhagavatam, up to this point, all the other philosophies don't deal with this, really. A touch they do. But it's brought out as greatness of the Lord. Oh, he's the biggest, but he's the smallest, and you have nothing to do, but you come and perform your pastimes, but it's still just the greatness of the Lord. It hasn't entered into the element of the rasa of it. Right? So therefore you have Advait, pretty straightforward. Dwait, you know, it's one, right? Like Shankara. Or Madhva, it's two. Very easy. Right? Or Dwait, Advait. It's one, it's two. You can look at it this way, you can look at it that way. But not simultaneously. So to look at contradictory things simultaneously, that is Achintabhedabheda Tattva. That is Bhagavatam. That's what is being special. So that's why it's bewildering. Otherwise, this point won't be brought up anywhere else. You won't see it so frankly brought up as a seeming fault. Right? The devotees would not bring it out that I don't understand this. Right? And here's Uddhava, an eternal associate. Right? But because they are Dwarkavasis, therefore it's all rules. So then, but because they're so much more intimate, then it's not just his greatness. There's something more, it doesn't make sense. But it's not a problem for them. But we have to remember that Krishna, in his full form, resides in Vrindavan. So there it's just contradiction. The rules aren't, it has a very, the forms manifest in Vrindavan are the forms of the whole rest of the cosmic creation. Right? That doesn't change. It's just the mood of it changes, right? You have the five rasas, you have the four orders, that means all the varnashram, you have dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's all going on in Braj. But the mood is that of that spontaneous love. It goes to Dwarka, then that love is there, that intimate love is there, but it's now formalized. So now all those things will be formalized. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the varnashram, it's all formalized now. But it's all seen in connection to Krishna. In Vrindavan, it's all seen in connection to Krishna, right? Right? Isn't it? Then you go to Vaikuntha, then you take out the intimacy, then it's just on reverence. Then you come to the material world, it's just the right thing to do. I'm being noble, I'm being good, I'm being correct, I'm being religious. Does that make sense? So that's it's so what you see changes is the mood. So that's the point, is that it's the mood that's important. Right? Otherwise, how do you accommodate? Bhaktivinoda Thakur had, I think, 12 or 13 children. Right? Shyamananda Pandit had 3 wives. You know, it's a problem. You know, for the hardcore transcendentalists, these things. Because the point is the rule is Krishna. Right? If Krishna is everything, then that means Krishna is the subject, Krishna is the object, Krishna is the verb, Krishna is the instruments used
assisting the subject meet the object. Krishna is the result that comes from that. Krishna is the place in which it takes, the time and place. Krishna is the cause for why it's even happening. So if that's there, then the husband acting according to Shastra, then that potency is Krishna. And the wife acting according to it is Krishna. And their interaction is Krishna. The result gained from that is Krishna. The environment that's recommended for it, that's Krishna. But, as we said before, there never can be a moment where you sit back and go, okay, it's done. Because as soon as you do, then, it's like Prabhupada gives the example of shaving. You have a sharp razor. One moment you are not conscious, you get cut. It's that simple. Right? So that's all. So in other words, it's like this. Does that make sense? That's a very, if you contemplate that, you'll see that does a lot. The application of that is very great. We'll take another one, right? It means we're glancing them because I don't want to create any problems. It's like this. The depth of focus, concentration, contemplation, humility, tolerance, understanding, not desiring any respect deserved for others, that is necessary for the transcendentalist as a celibate to get out of the material world, is the same amount as it takes for a grihastha to run his grihastha life successfully. Right? The same. So if you don't learn it as a brahmachari, there's no loss. Because that same focus and everything, not one is more voluntary, the other one is a little bit more impressed upon one, if you want to be successful. So either way you can learn. That's why for us pravriti nivriti doesn't matter, because we're using connection to Krishna. So for us technically they're both nivriti. Right? It's the path of going back to Godhead. Just we may use the celibate path or we may use the householder path. But our householder is not a pravriti margi. They're not karmakandis. They're actually engaged in their life for Krishna consciousness. But it doesn't mean the forms of it don't look the same as the karmi. That they're not telling each other how much they appreciate or being nice or smiling or like that. Right? It's exactly the same. But the mood of it is different. Otherwise, what's the difference between Vrindavan Dwarka or Dwarka and Vaikuntha? Right? Vrindavan and Dwarka, they're both intimate, but then one has the rules, the mood. Dwarka and Vaikuntha are both follow the rules, but one's intimate, one's not. One's on reverence. Right? So it's the mood that makes the difference, not the form of it. So we tend to take the form of it. Oh, detached grihastha, he's there with his wife, taking her out for puchkas or something, Oh, what gross sense gratifiers. Like that. But that's not the point. It's the mood. It's what has to be taken care of. Right? Does that make sense? Getting into more detail is a whole different topic. But that's the point, is that it's so perfect, the system, that you can learn the same thing through either. And generally it's a combination. You spend time as a brahmachari, then as a grihastha, then back to vanaprastha like this. So it works as both, right? Or even if someone's he grew up, he was born in a family and lived there for some years. So he's exposed to it. So you both of them, they both work, right? But of the two, technically, being the celibate path is the easier path, right? You don't polish your lota, it's not going to not talk to you for 3 days. Right? So, in that way, it's easier. But, if you don't polish your lota for 3 days, then you're also not, something's wrong there in the what's happening in your sadhana. Your focus is not there, your service attitude's not there.
So that's the point, is if you don't develop it naturally, it means under the teacher you develop it because they're giving pressure. But once you leave the school, then who's going to give you that pressure? So either you're giving yourself pressure or the family will give you that pressure. Either way, but the point is the same points to learn. You know, that are not different. Same points to learn. Same points to learn are the same points to learn. Oh, the same. It produces the same. It produces the same results. But if you don't know it, don't understand this, you'll think it's something completely different. Right? So therefore, according to what you're saying, it means, now if we apply what I'm mentioning here, just in general, therefore, you could say is that the successful marriage, you could probably say, is the Krishna conscious one, and the unsuccessful one, you could say, is the non-Krishna conscious. Because being in that mode of humility, tolerance, respect, not expecting anything for himself, being Krishna conscious, then trying to taking as an aspect of his service, perfecting that grihastha life, he would be doing all that for Krishna. So it's successful because he's making that endeavor, and it's not successful because he sees it separate from Krishna. Oh, these women are crazy. He says, oh, hello, every idiot knows that before they even started, so how is it you're saying that now? If you're so smart that you're saying, oh yeah, the women are like this, but if you were so smart, you would have known that before you even started. Right? I decide I want to train horses, you know, and that, and then I complain that they kick. It's kind of like anybody who's smart knows that before they get started. Or he figures that out and goes, well, that's just the way horses are. Right? So if you need to work with horses, then you deal with the kick. Getting thrown off the horse, right? They take great pleasure in running under very low branches or stopping suddenly and throwing you off. Because if they can do that, they're in control, right? Every living entity wants to be God. Right? Does this make some sense? See, but it's a very delicate point because you can't throw it into karmakandas. Oh, it's all right, then therefore family life is fine. No, family life is fine if it's connected to Krishna. You know, just like renunciation is fine if you're connected to Krishna. Otherwise, you're so renounced but not. Who is this Swami? Ramachandra Kaviraj, was it? Ramachandra Kaviraj. Big sannyasi. He was a godbrother of Lord Chaitanya's guru. Very renounced, very philosophical, didn't understand one thing about devotion. Nothing. Zip. Zero. Ramachandra Puri. Okay, yeah. There's a lot of Ramachandras there, right? Ramachandra Puri. Okay? But his renunciation wasn't actually engaged in the Lord's service. You know what I'm saying? They're both attachments. It's just the attachment, it means it's just like I'm attached to this room, okay, so I'm sitting in the middle of the room enjoying the ambience, right? Or I'm attached to getting out of the room and I'm standing at the door. Both are attachments. So if they're not engaged in the Lord's service, but because detachment is closer to being out of the material world and closer to the spiritual world, it's given prominence. Right? So what it means by detachment means detached from material, but it doesn't mean detached from spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yes, no? Yeah? So it's a very subtle point, is that attachments in the heart, it means there's something in your heart, that's why you're here, right? You wouldn't be here if there was nothing mundane in your heart, unless of course you're an avatar, and then we take this back and we thank you for asking all these questions to bring out, to engage our, how you say, speculative platform in Krishna's service. But if you're not, then we're here because we have material desire. So the intelligent man then goes, okay, I'm in the hospital because I have, you know, pneumonia. And so, therefore, I take the medicine, eat the diet, and do all the things the doctor tells me to get out, rather than, you know, open the windows and stand there in fresh breeze and go into the shower, get soaking wet, and then lay down on the bed and put a wet sheet and turn the fan on because it's nice and cool. Right? So the intelligent man knows, I'm here because I have this disease. So therefore, if I take the medicine for that disease, I get out of here. So is the point is I got out of here like this or I got out of here like that? Oh, yes. Oh, isn't it? He's so prestigious. He has the, you know, little goalies with the gold dust in them. And mine's just, you know, made out of just, you know, just herbs. So how come, doctor, how come I don't get the special medicine like him? That's because he has that disease. He gets that medicine. You have this disease. You get that. No, no. But it's, you know, how can he be better than me? And the gold guy, you know, is, oh, I'm better than everyone else. My medicine's got gold in it, right? Right? Does that make some sense? So that's the whole point, is that why should one feel he's better because for the medicine for my disease is renunciation. The medicine for their disease is engaging in properly engaged in household life, according to Naishkarmya. Why does it matter? You know, because that means if you have a problem with it, means that you do put a value on it. If you renounce and say women are nonsense, then if they're nonsense, that means there's no substance. So what do you care for something that has no substance? So what would you care if someone else is dealing with something with no substance? But no, why is it? And this is, that means it has substance to you. Otherwise, why would you care? You understand? That's why it says the gold, pebbles and stones, you don't see as any different. Right? Even pebbles, stones, right? Big stones, small stone. Big stones better, small stones smaller. Does that make sense? So it's actually a very unique and different viewpoint of things than what we're used to. But the intelligent man knows what he needs. So some, by hearing about Grihastha life, then it clears all the doubts. But others, by hearing it, then have the knowledge by which they can enter into it, and then by practice, clear them. So you either clear it by hearing, clear it by seeing, or clear it by doing. One of these three. Right? And these are all called intelligent, right? Doing and not learning, that's foolish, right? That's why Prabhupada will say, the man who gets married is second-class man. First-class man doesn't get married. But that's a main on which path you're using. But as far as devotee, it doesn't make any difference. He said first-class, second-class, man, not devotee. So therefore, the smart devotee goes, okay, I am first-class man, I don't get married. I'm second-class, I do get married. And therefore, I'm going to engage that in Krishna's service, and I'm going to become first-class. Because real first-class means pure and alloyed devotee. Right? Right? So if I'm first-class man but not a devotee, what's the use of being first-class? Right? Because otherwise, like we saw there, Ramachandra Puri was first-class man. He's renounced. But of what use? So it's a very... The point is everybody should take the medicine. Means, in other words, you take food. What food and to what quantity and how many times according to your own particular need. Right? Someone takes 5 chapatis, someone takes 4, someone takes 10. They take according to their need. Right? Someone eats once a day, someone twice, sometimes 3 times. Right? The Chinese, I heard, eat 6 times a day. Right? But they don't live in holes with round doors and have hair on their toes. But there's a common point of 6 meals a day. Right? Does that make sense? So that's actually what intelligent Krishna consciousness is. I situate myself according to what my actual nature is, and I engage it in Krishna consciousness. So whatever the conditioned nature, I engage it in Krishna consciousness. That's what's going to get me back to Godhead. So whether that's renunciation, whether it's attachment, it doesn't matter. Right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah? That's a fine point. So therefore, you don't have to think, oh, they're doing this. No, that's what's good for them. And you don't have to think, because they're doing this, and why I shouldn't be doing that. No, that's not good for you. This is good for you. Oh, they're taking fever medicine, I'm taking cold medicine. Why I shouldn't be taking fever medicine? Right? No, because you don't have a fever, you have a cold. Right? So like that, then it's just intelligent. So that's why the brahmacharis don't feel any attraction to household life and don't feel bad towards anybody who's in household life, because that's what's necessary for them. And at this stage of one's life, brahmacharya is what's important, or is the medicine for oneself. So therefore it moves around. That's why we don't get worried, you know. Even at this point, the social structure of our society may be, not very traditional. People renounce when they're younger, they're getting married when they're older, they're doing all kinds of things, going through so many marriages. It's not ideal, but if they connect it to Krishna and they get the result of Krishna consciousness, it works. And hopefully with time and the society's been there and the generations go by, then they won't have to go through that. They can work all these things out in its natural order, right? You know what I'm saying? But it'll take time. It takes time, practice, and all that. So, why, if we're looking at a 10,000-year movement, what's the big deal about taking, 50 years to get it together? Right? Prabhupada said the third generation is, they'll be doing well. Right? So that's when things will start to look a little bit more, but still these same points won't go away. Right? They won't go away. Right? Otherwise, Dhruva Maharaj, you see Hiranyakashipu, biggest, nastiest, stinkiest, smelliest. Right? There's never been anyone like him in the past, isn't now, and will never be in the future. He was the, one and only biggest demon in the universe. Right? But you saw when he spoke to the women of his house, he spoke very nicely. And he's the biggest, nastiest demon around, right? Very nicely spoke. Sweet words, appropriate words, perfect. He's talking to his mother, his wives, the other ladies of the house. Anyone who would have been concerned that Hiranyaksha had been killed. Right? So you would expect, here's the biggest, nastiest like that, he's going to be very rough. Right? But he was very gentle when it was needed. So in the same way, the devotee, in dealing, it doesn't matter. You see Kasyapa dealing with Devahuti, very gentle. You see Kapila dealing with his mother, very gentle. You see Kasyapa dealing with Diti and Aditi, very gentle. So here you're going from biggest demons to, biggest, sages to... And he said, Kardama and Kasyapa are both sons of Brahma. Right? And then Hiranyakashipu is big demon, right? Then you have the Supreme Lord talking to his mother. But there, if you look at it, there's a common pattern here. They're all dealing in the same way. Doesn't matter who you are, the husband doesn't deal in a way, or a man doesn't deal with his women in any way that displeases them, even when he's angry. Right? That's the instruction of Mahabharata. Shakuntala is telling that to Bharata. not Bharat, Dushmanta, when he's rejecting her. That even when the man is angry, he never does anything that's displeasurable to his women. And we see everybody does that. Demon, demigod, human, you know, the Supreme Lord, they all do it. So therefore, why would a devotee, when he's dealing in household life, not deal nicely with his wife? She's been in the house all day. She wants to go out for a walk, you know, so he takes her out for a walk. That's just the way they are. They like variety. They like to be dealt with nicely. He deals like that. So then what's the maya? Because that's the way God says to deal. So that means him dealing like that is Krishna conscious. And the guy who always ignores the wife and tells him to be quiet and is out with his friends and this and that, he's actually the one that doesn't understand how Krishna wants the service done. You understand? So that's the point. If you're going to deal, it means, in other words, let's say like this. Given that example, it's the thorn. Right? You have a thorn, and you take it out with another thorn. Okay? So now, the way I'm going to take it out, can I do something that a thorn can't do with the thorn? Can I do some technique that a thorn can't do? Like, you know, clip the top off, the excess off of the top of the other thorn. Can I use the thorn to do that? No. You can only dig and poke. Right? And the other thorn, is it going to react in any way other than a thorn? No. So it got in by digging and poking. I'm going to get out by digging and poking. You understand? So if you have that attachment, you're only going to get it out with the same kind of attachment. But the difference is the other one went in unknowingly, and this one you're using your brains to take out. If you don't use your brains, you're going to have two stickers. Right? So that's the whole point. The intelligent man who, following the Shastra, deals with his household life, according to Shastra, to please Krishna, that's intelligent. Otherwise, he's going to deal, his marriage will fail, but it doesn't mean that because he failed his marriage that he actually has uprooted his desire. He may have, but he may not have. So if he has, great, then he didn't waste any time learning how to be a good grihastha, and, you know, it's done. But if it didn't uproot it, then he's got serious problems. It's like the jnani. The jnani can't purify himself because he can't do karma. You become purified by karma. Then comes jnana. And then from the platform of jnana, you maintain your purity and you refine it. But you can't generate purity from jnana. Right? That's why it's not a recommended position. Because there's no scope for purification. That's why buddhi yoga is the recommended position, because you have karma and jnana. By knowledge you contemplate, and by action you practice. So it's a very fine point, is that it happens, but the point is that they have to know what they're doing. Because it's a very fine line between what's Krishna conscious and what's not. So if that's understood, you'll get a very great result from it. You can deal with the maximum amount of attachments, clearing them in grihastha life. You can only deal with the minimal amount in the brahmacharya life. You know, unless you go back to principles, then you can clear the same amount. But does that make sense? But as far as external, what's afforded, then the brahmachari affords less than the grihastha more. Does that make sense? Yeah? Sure? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a disciple from Germany.
And then he studied many Vedic literatures.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
He says, because if you look at the literature, Varna, Sapai, Bhagavad, and this applies to rain, then this book maintains on the living is everybody has some services, everybody has some duty to do. Usually, and just pastors.
Yeah, so he must be God, right? Yeah. You hear? Yeah? No? He's talking about the disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from Germany. He studied all the Vedic literatures and came to the conclusion that Krishna had to be God because everybody else in the universe has work they have to do, but Krishna has no work to do. You know, he just enjoys his pastimes. Wouldn't it be from a Jnanamaya platform that he doesn't need it? Okay. No. It works. It means, oh, that it works? It would look like this from the Jnanamaya platform. Yeah, from the Jnanamaya platform, then contradictions don't make sense. Right? Realization means it makes sense. Because what you're doing is understanding has gone to the point where the mind has absorbed it. Because the mind crosses reason. So here is that faith and other things have happened that one is able to actually see what's working behind it. Does that make sense? So, vijnan means it's been absorbed into your life. Well, jnan means you know it, but it doesn't mean you do it. That's why a lot of times devotees, they'll go into household life and then things start getting rough and then they go, this is crazy. What is the game here? And they think, now I've understood. Yes, they've understood, but they may or may not have realized. Right? If they realize, it means when they leave it, then they stay like that. Right? And they're able to give advice to others how to work with it and how to get out of it. But if they're only able to criticize, and then later on you see that they end up starting another family, that means they only understood, but didn't realize. Right? And that's what you'll see is that, why is it then, let us just say, for discussion's sake, that second family they start, or that third family they start, why is it that seemingly it's going better than the other ones? Because he's entered into it with knowledge. He already knows what he's getting at. The other one, he had another idea. Now he knows. You know, experience is there, but there's knowledge. So that knowledge and experience combination, that's what gives results. Only knowledge, only experience, they don't give the good results. Right? Or only hearing. You know, you've gone to a seminar and can talk about it like that, and you're expert at all the terminologies, that won't work either. That's just the first stage. Second case is something has to be going on, right? So what's recommended is the brain is working and the activity is performed. So that's why it'll work. They know what they're getting into. Therefore, they do it better. They perform their duties better. So in the Vedic society, that it should have been that the brahmachari knew all that when he graduated. So at 25, when he gets married, he already has all the knowledge, you know, of what he's getting involved in. Then, with 25, 30 years of practice, you know, as a good grihastha, then he will turn into a vanaprastha who is actually completely detached. And his wife also. But if it doesn't, then, you know, you'll learn to figure it out later, but at least you figured it out. Yeah. Okay? Yes. Yeah, that's true. He's making the point that most of the gurukuls would be run by householders, so they'd also have, you know, see the dealings in the house and that properly also. So he would hear and he would see. And so that meant then his practice would be good, or he would remain a naistika brahmachari. Like that. But here in one sense, the brahmacharis get a little bit of that same kind of thing, though not as close, in just their society is designed that the household brahmacharya, everything is so close and mixed together. So you do some see things, but the problem is, since it hasn't been pointed out so much, it's more the tough brahmacharis that eat chunks of wood for breakfast and that, those kind of guys, then they lose something. But the point is, being there as example was there. Their own parents were there. They see the teacher's example. And that they go around, they see. You read in the literatures, if you know. In other words, if you're aware that it exists, there's so much example how to properly follow. Right? But if one's not aware that it exists, the tendency will be to have one's own concept of what's renunciation. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is Grihastha Ashram meant for Anartha Nivritti, or does it take it farther? Depends how you define Anartha Nivritti, because you have two basic definitions. One is what is after Bhajana Kriya and before Nishta. Right? In other words, we would take it as Anishta Bhajana Kriya. It's not fixed. So you can say it's going to do a lot of that, but it's actually going to do that if you're doing from the platform of Naishkarmya, which means its platform is beyond that. So the consciousness, as it goes beyond Anartha Nivritti, especially when it gets into Ruchi, But otherwise, even at Nishta, one will be a very excellent Grihastha. But the other form of Anartha Nivritti means you've been freed from the conditioning that I am this body, and you understand me the soul, but that's full realization. Right? You may not realize fully your relationship with Krishna, but you fully realize that I am not of this world. So the point is, Grihastha life will help one get by the one as long as you're endeavoring for the second. In other words, the more you're endeavoring for the second, then actually the more scope you have to be a successful Grihastha. Like that, technically. Does that make sense?
You mentioned that the form is not as important as the mood.
The form is not as important as the mood, yeah. Okay. So in the culture of Krishna consciousness, since the mood is more important than the form, how important is the form, especially the traditional forms, in application of our life? In other words, where it's there, it's applicable, traditional forms are nicer because that's the way they're doing, because that's what they do in the spiritual world. Right? It's just like, let us say you like a particular group of persons and they have a particular language or dress or behavior. The tendency is, whenever possible, even though you're not necessarily in that group and you would like to get into that group, you would be, whenever you can, emulating how much of it you can. You know what I'm saying? Even though you're not a full-fledged member. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that was why, is whenever we can, we stick to the tradition as much as we can, because that's what they do in the spiritual world. Krishna does wear a dhoti, Radharani does wear a sari. And we're sorry that some people have this sari attitude towards saris, that saris are a Muslim thing and not a Vedic thing. But the acharyas use the word sari when they talk about Radha and Krishna's pastimes 5,000 years ago. They use the word sari. Radharani put on her sari. Radharani covered her head. Radharani put kumkum on. So we would like to do these things. That's what they do. isn't it? Krishna shukta shakari bhaji nalita kushmanda dali dalna dugdudumi dadi mochakanda. He means Krishna eats these things. That wouldn't it be nice to be able to cook those things, offer those things to Krishna? Why would he eat them if they weren't the best? Right? You don't think if Mexican was the best food, Krishna wouldn't be eating it? Right? Or Italian or this or that. If it was the absolute best, that's what Krishna would be eating. Right? But it mentions that you have your standard food where they eat there, and then you have regional things. Because if you take a cuisine, devotees say, oh, what's wrong with Italian or this or that? They're not eating actually fully the regional cuisine. Right? Otherwise, you have to go through the whole thing. You know, you don't just sit down to a plate of pasta and that's Italian. You know, you have your first course, your antipasta, your pasta, the thing after it, and all the... Right? And according to the season, according to things, and believe it or not, Italians don't put tomato sauce in everything. It's one option out of many. You know, so a lot of the things Italians eat, non-Italians would not like. You know? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, each cuisine has some specialty items that are special. So those things are naturally part of any kind of cuisine. You know what I'm saying? So that's not the problem. So it's not that. So that's mentioned in the Shastra that you can also, besides offering what Krishna eats, you offer any local specialties. Right? So if one place has a specialty, then that one thing is good. And you leave the other, you know, so many preparations as being not necessarily very important. Does that make sense? So it's natural to stay as close as you can to them, because, in other words, you have to have a form. Even though we say mood is more important than form, there must be a form to express the mood. But of the two, the mood is more important than the form. Right? And that's why you see is that the master is always appreciated more than the expert or more than the neophyte. Because the neophyte, the form's not very good and the mood may or may not be very good. Right? The expert, the form is very good, but there's a dryness to it. The master, then the form and the mood are good. Right? And sometimes you see someone when they first start, the mood is very good, though they don't have at all any technique, and it's appreciated because the mood is good. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, in trying to express that the form, mood is more important than the form, doesn't mean that the form loses any importance. It's just in what's important, knowing what's more important, what's primary importance and what's secondary importance. Does that make sense? Then you have a perspective. Right? Otherwise, let's say I have 10 things to get done. But if I don't have a perspective on, you know, importance, how do I know which one to do first? Right? Just like, let's say, the sink is broken and water is shooting all over the kitchen, and therefore the floor is wet and the floor needs to be cleaned. Okay, so now I could take my mop and rags and buckets and go out there and start cleaning that floor. But it would be foolish to say it's not important to clean the floor, but it would be more intelligent to say first fix the tap so there isn't water coming on the floor, then clean the floor. Right? So they're both important, but you have a priority. So therefore mood is most important than the form. Right? But you can't express mood except for a form. A verb means nothing on its own. If I say, swimming. Yeah? Doesn't mean anything. If I say, Krishna is swimming, then we have some nouns. Or Krishna is swimming in the Jamuna. Then I have some nouns. So then the verb has meaning. So even though the verb is the most important, without the nouns, it doesn't have meaning. But the nouns on their own get nothing done. And when the verb is... So one could say, therefore, the verb's existence is dependent upon the nouns. right? Because without the nouns, the verb can't do anything. But the nouns on their own will exist, but without the verb, nothing actually happens. Right? So if existence is the important thing, then one wonders why the verb. That's the question in this verse. Why the verb? Why is Krishna connecting with these things? He has nothing to do. He's dealing with something that does have something to do. He is detached. He's dealing with the women. He's just, why that? Because that's signifying the verb is active, and that therefore, and the nouns are there. Right? But otherwise, then you see is that it's just existence. Right? So getting something done is more important than having nothing get done. Right? So therefore, transitive is more important than intransitive. Dry transitive is actually special because it points out the relationship. Right? In other words, relationship is subject and object. Right? So now, and they're connected by the verb. But now, if I don't use a ditransitive verb, you understand ditransitive? Ditransitive means it accomplishes two things at once. Like, let's say, milking would be a ditransitive. In other words, I'm getting the milk out of the cow, and I'm getting possession of milk. Right? You have to milk the cow. Means because the cow is full of milk, you need to remove the milk. But by milking the cow, you also get the milk in a bucket. Right? You understand? So, in that, therefore, I can make the whole point is that the milking is the prime thing, and, you know, and take the cow or the milk, and the other one can go out as a result or a cause. Right? Right? I'm milking the cow because the cow feels some discomfiture. So I've gotten the milk, but the cause was the milk, the cow, right? Or I have a cow, I milk the cow, but my result is I have milk, so it makes it dative. But in both of those, it takes it out of the direct relationship. So even though we say the karakas are directly related with the verb, actually it's the noun and it's the nominative and the accusative that are actually most directly connected. So that's where the relationship is happening. Everything else is supporting that. Does this make any sense? Right? So in this case, ditransitive, you don't want to reduce the relationship. You want both of them to stay within the subject and object. Therefore, ditransitive is used. So in other words, we see it's all in mood and it's all in relationship. Right? Unless you exist, of course, you can't do something. You know, so the state of existence sometimes has to be recognized. It's like, oh, let's cook lunch. But unless there's an existence of items to cook for lunch, you can't cook lunch. So I have to have the vegetables and grains and ghee and sugar and spices, then I can cook the lunch. But the taste comes in the existence of the vegetables and that they are interacted together, you know, with the cook and the pots and the fire and all that, and then you end up with, you know, the preparations. Right? Does that make some sense? So that interaction is more. That's why the rasa is more in Bhagavan than in Brahman. You know, because as Brahman, he's self-satisfied. But as Bhagavan, he's the lord of these. So that means you're making a distinction between him and his energies. Brahman, you don't make the distinction. Brahman is full of qualities. It's bogus to say it has no qualities. Just to say it's transcendental is a quality. Or it's eternal, or it's unlimited, or it's full of bliss, or it is bliss. All these are all qualities. So why one? Someone knows two or three. Someone who knows more knows unlimited. So Brahman is, but Parabrahman means that he is a person who interacts with his energies. Does that make sense? Is that okay? You had something?
What does the audience of the first time?
What are the elements of household life that please Krishna? Ah. Very, how do you say? Generally we see the principle that's given is cooperation. That husband or wife can cooperate together. Right? So that means there's a technique for that. But that's the result, because the other things are simply ways to express that and all that. You know? Okay. But cooperation. But that's with any relationship, is cooperation. It's just that there's more form to manifest that cooperation through. And that cooperation there has so many more forms that look contradictory than in other relationships. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the main thing is cooperation. Is that cooperation what? Is it directed to Krishna? It depends what you mean by directed. It means that if two people agree to work together, you know, and be sensitive to each other's needs so they're aware of each other, but they're doing that because that's how Krishna wants it done, then you can say yes. But if you're saying that those moments when they're focusing what's the other person's doing or the mood or this and that and saying that's not connected to Krishna, then that will be a problem. Because Krishna is saying that's what you have to do. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So I'll end here. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.